Okay, today's daf is daf Yud Tet. And we were holding by trying to understand how it is that Alibi Rabbi Meir, we would say that the halacha is Ein Ne'emanim L'Poslot, even though these are the witnesses that are coming to confirm that it's their signature, and yet they're not believed to say that there was something wrong, that they were Amusim. Okay, we figured out maybe certain things we could understand. We don't believe to say that they were Ketanim or Psulim, because the people would have been Medayik at the time, and this runs against the Chazaka that that's the case. But for heaven's sakes, to say that they had a gun to their heads, they're not believed, why not? And we came out yesterday with the most incredible statement of Rav Chisda. That Rav Chisda said, you see from here, let's just start to say it over again on the third line, that Kasava Rabbi Meir, Edim Shamrulem Chitmu Sheker, Valti Arego Yeargu Vyayachatmu Sheker, that they should allow themselves to be killed and not sign falsely, despite the fact that a guy has a gun to his head. So again, the question is over here, what possible tzad would there be to say such a thing? The truth is there's a number of possibilities. One possibility is that Bichlal, we know there's a very important machlokas between the Tur and the Rambam as to whether if a person wants to be Meiser Nefesh on something that he feels is a Kiddush Hashem, that he is he allowed to or not. According to the Rambam, he's kilu shefech dabim, and he is just suicidal. According to the Tur, he's allowed to be meiser nefesh. Most learn that it's a big machlokas. The truth is that there are cases where the Rambam would also agree. So that if we hold like the Tur, then perhaps the issue over here is that it's a midat chasidut. That's how the Rambam learns. And therefore, the Gemara immediately taps the Sfara. If we're telling somebody mitzad hadin to do something, the fact that he says he didn't do beyond the din as a midat chasidut can't possibly call these veisim atzmor rasha. That's ridiculous. Are the bezdin that are going to tell him to sign as a lie their rishayim too? So this makes no sense. Okay, that's what the Gemara will say to Rav Chisda. It's a very interesting other shita that occurs among us early rishayim, that something that is basically a destruction of a person's integrity, he has the right to be meiser nefesh. This is the norm. First it says, I don't give up my life to become something that I always stood for. I stood for truth. You want me to sign lies? I don't sign lies. So you do what you want. I'm not going to violate my own integrity. So this is not in terms of Kiddush Hashem, but in terms of human norms. Norms are always acceptable. This is what human life consists of. Very interesting shita. So that a person who agrees to sign sheker is as if he's saying, I don't have that level of integrity. And if the Eidim say that about themselves, then it's considered to be a darga of rishkut. Another possibility. Others learn, and this is bichlal, a very nogeya question all over. When I'm allowed to do something because it's a sakanat nefashot to me, am I allowed to do it in a way that's mafsid to others? That's not so plush. In other words, yeah, this comes up all the time in terms of nituach metim and so on. In other words, I want an aver from somebody, so why can't I, to save my life, steal the aver from the guy who just died? For me, it's a sakanat nefashot. He's dead already. What difference does it make to him? He said, whatever, I mean, but it's not yours. You don't have a right to take something. So, it's sakanat nefashot. Again, there's a big machlokas in about whether I have a right to violate something that's not mine, just because it's my sakadat nefashot. So perhaps that's involved over here. But in any event, we're docha Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda was trying to say that the reason that Rabbi Meir holds that we will not believe the Eidim with the Pesha Sarua Pesha Yitir is because even with the Ne'emanut of that Migo, what it is that you're saying can't be to make yourself a Rasha, because that's ipso facto not acceptable to the Beit Din. And therefore, if Chisda wants to say that the fact that you would be willing to sign on a shtar with a gun to your head that wasn't true is a meisim atzmo rasha, therefore we can't accept you, to which, Amar le Rava, that is absurd. Hashta ilu otu lekaman lamluki. Suppose we were sitting in Bezdin, huh? Me and you, and this guy comes to ask us, what do? I've got a gun to my head. Do I sign the shtar, sheker, or not? Would we not say to him, Amrinu lu zilu chatomu, velotit katlun? Sign the shtar and don't allow yourself to be killed. The only things that we would tell a person to allow himself to be killed for are the three averas of Avodah Zorah, Gilui Arayot, and Shvichut Damim, which we learn from Psukim. So now you're telling me that because they essentially listened to what Beit Din would have said anyway, now they're Rishayim if they say that that's what we did. I mean, that's crazy. What are you going to say? Because of a Midat Chasidut, so therefore they're Rishayim for not doing the Midat Chasidut? We're going to answer, how could you do such a thing? What do you mean? You told me in Beis Din to do it. Ela, therefore, that can't be the reasoning of that. According to Rabbi Meir, we will not accept their testimony to say that they were anusim. There's a much more fundamental problem over here, which explains the whole thing, Alibet Rabbi Meir. The entire basis of our belief in these people, and our willingness to say that we don't look at it as a kivan shigit, shuvan akosar amavir, and people coming now to be mara, a star, which has been looked at in Beis Din and as completely kosher as if it was testimony, is only because we need them to be Mekayim, their signatures. We don't have Ktav Yadam Yotzim Makom Acher. Ah! But in this case, my friends, we do not need them. You know why we don't need them? Because nobody was arguing about whether the Shtar was written. The Lova agreed that the Shtar was written. There's nothing wrong with the Shtar. The Lova is simply saying, I paid it back. That's the point. So what then would be the need for their Chatima to say, well, I mean, but if the Lova himself is saying he paid it back, and we're only believing the Lova, so that's the best. Because the Svar Rabbi Meir says, Ravun Amarav. The Omer Ravun Amarav, in a case where a borrower is Moda Bishtar Shikitavo, then Ein Tzarich Lekaimo. The Malva does not have to be Mekayim the Shtar for it to have the full validity of a Shtar. Because the only reason that we were saying that it needs to be Mekuyam is a halacha, I mean, this is how Rashi understands this, a halacha of a churma de rabbanan, that we want to double check. But lamaisik de lo vezmoda, that there's nothing to double check. So then essentially we're here in front of witnesses. The witnesses say, you borrowed the money. The shtar is still in the hand of the malva. What's it doing there? We're not interested in hearing your tainas that you were poor reya. You have witnesses? No? Then pay up. That's all. Therefore, we don't need in this case. What's the point? The lova agrees. It's a kosher shtar. What do we need to go around looking for their testimony? Yes, it is indeed our signature. And now when they're coming to say, but it wasn't really a good shtar. Sorry, sir. You're like anybody else who knows nothing about it. And we only listen to the Eidim. And that explains why, according to Rabbi Meir, no matter what they're saying, they're not believed. I don't care what it is. Whatever it is, why should we listen to them? Gufa. Let's take a look into that halacha itself. Omer Ravun Amarav, Modeh b'shtar shekitavo, a lova who agrees that the shtar was written, Ein Tzarich Lekaimo, the malva does not have to go around now to be Mekayim that shtar. Now, Rav Nachman, who heard Rav Huna say this, said to him, excuse me, but ganva genuve lo malcha. What do you got to be a ganav for? You know, you want to say that you agree with Rabbi Meir? Say so. Don't beat around the bush and make people think that you're giving over a psak halacha that everybody agrees to. Nobody. This is a das yachid. It's Rabbi Meir's das. And stop giving me this business of this is the psak halacha. Tell me that Rabbi Meir. We just saw that. That's the only way to understand Rabbi Meir. Tell me that's what Rabbi Meir holds. Okay. You hold like Rabbi Meir? Aim a halachic Rabbi Meir. Don't give me this business of trying to hide behind some kind of a spray over here that this is halacha. Omar le, umar hecha svira. So what does Rabbi hold about the halacha? I mean, Lamai says, is it true? Omar le, we remember that Rabbi Nachman is the Dayan complete. I mean, he is absolutely Mr. Dayan. So whenever he gives over, we ask him halacha. He doesn't say halacha kid. He says, this is the way we do it in court. Okay, I'm telling you that these are the court procedure. So, Marle, I'll tell you the court procedure. Kiatu lekaman ledina. Somebody comes to me to din. Then what we say is, if they have a shtar and the lovas agree the shtar is kosher, we say to the guy, gentlemen, don't waste our time. If you have a shtar and you have a kiyum of the shtar, we're happy to take the case. Meanwhile, zilu kimu shtarai, who go out there, find the witnesses, and then we'll discuss it. Because we're not interested in having a suit. We know exactly what's going to happen. The guy's going to walk in. He's going to say, I paid it. And if he says, I paid it, and you don't have a key above a shtar, we've got nothing to say. So in other words, we're saying, Zivu kibu shtarech v'chotu ledina. I do not agree with Rabbi Meir, and that in terms of practical halakha, either you have a shtar mekuyam, or you don't bother even showing up in court, because the guy can simply walk out on you with a tain of paratif. Om Rav Yoram Arav. Ha'omer shtar amanahu zeh. Somebody who says this, now we don't know who it is who's saying this. Is it the witness that's saying it? Is it the lova that's saying it? Who exactly is saying Ishtar Amana? We're going to come to that in a moment. But first, let's understand the statement. Someone says the shtar that is presently in front of the court is Ashtar Amana. Now, Ashtar Amana means that it was a shtar based on trust. So what happened is a guy wants to open up a credit line. In order to open up that credit line, he had to do what the banks in Israel make you do today. Sign away your life, your children, your car, your house, and so on and so forth, despite the fact you haven't even borrowed a penny yet. But if you want to borrow anything, we got to be in a position to be able to collect it before you even borrow it. So this guy trusted the fellow that he wants to open a credit line with, The guy says, look, I'm not interested any time you need money sitting around. We're going to go, we're going to get a shtar, and each time it's going to be a new shtar, and I'm going to be sitting there with a box full of shtar out. You want a credit line by me, I'm happy to lend you money. What I want you to do is you write out a shtar for $100,000 today, which is going to be your credit line. You can draw on it when you want. And you be meshaved me your property from today, because otherwise the shtar is a horrific thing. Because what it means is that if the shtar is not chal with the she'ibud on the karka from today, then if the guy who is supposedly opening the credit line and is lending the money has debts on him against his money, the guy who's rather borrowing the money has debts on himself from somewhere else now, and they want to collect it, this guy is going to be able to say, no, I'm sorry, I had the shtar from before, you see. But he didn't. The money was only borrowed later. So unless the shtar from this moment is actually a shtar that's for shopping the fussing, he's going to be messing up anybody else that he's got debts to. And they won't be able to collect because somebody else is going to claim that my shibut came before yours. Okay, so we're talking about everything was done very much on the up and up. He got the edim, he went ahead and he was meshaving his karka to him and said, look, at any point that this guy wants to collect $100,000 from my property, he can. I trust him. I don't owe him a penny, but I trust him. Now what happens is, the shtar is being presented, the guy wants $100,000, I've never borrowed a penny from him, so why do I have a shtar? Because I trusted you like an idiot, and I thought you weren't going to collect on this shtar. So Mamela, in that case, the shtar itself would be still kosher, says Rav, ain't no ne'aman, says the Gemara. I mean, I don't understand, the Gemara, you're saying someone who says, who is the someone? I mean, Elam and the Gamar logo, what the borrower says? Well, obviously he's not believed. I understand. Anytime a guy presents a shtar, all you have to do is say, well, yeah, but I never borrowed the money. I only wrote the shtar. And it's laughable. So Pshita Kokamini, why would he be able to say such a thing? Viela, so what is he talking about? That the lender said it, the Gamar Malva? Very nice. Tavo alav bracha. I understand. Why shouldn't the lender be believed? If he wants to say, well, we can't collect with the shtar, thank you, sir, for being so honest. Why you trusted me in the first place? I always was an honest guy. So that, how could it mean that? Ella, the Kamri, aided. So the only case that it could possibly be discussed is witnesses are saying that it's a shtar amana. Now let's figure out what the case is. We already know that if the shtar is mikuyam because of testimony of other people, or we compared the handwriting to a shtar that had already been checked in a Beit Din, of course they're not believed. That's like anybody else. You have kosher witnesses. We don't believe anything like that, so it's going to be ma'ar a shtar. And if it's the other way around, that we do need their testimony. In order to be Mekayim the Shtar, they have to be able to say, this is indeed our signature. So then if they're adding the words, but, it was a Shtar Amanan, we never saw him borrow any money. So then why are they not believed? It's a Pesha Asar, we're a Pesha Kir. We're saying it's a kosher Shtar, but you can't collect with it. Omar Rava, we have three possibilities here, and that's that Simon Ba'ash. So that Rava, who's the base of the Ba'ash, says, Liolam deka Omar Love. It's talking about that the Love says it. And he's not Ne'eman, but this is Kiravuna. Yom Ravuna Marav, Modi Bishtash Ketavo, Ancient Tzarek Lekaimo. So there is a big Kiddush over here anyway. Since it's only the Love who is saying that, yes, it's true, I did give him the Shtar. And yes, I did tell the Eid to sign on the Shtar, but it was a Shtar Amana that I trusted him not to use unless I borrowed the money. So you might think in that case the Lova actually can say that, well, I mean, if you're relying on me, that I'm telling you that the shtar is Amod Shikatavo, then I'm telling you I never borrowed the money. The finish over here is, once the Lova is Mode, then that means that the shtar is zipso facto a ilun defkrei dutam bebeit din. Whatever else it is that the Lova has to say doesn't interest us. So that in this case, it becomes now a shtar that is signed by two kosher edim. No more than that is required. We don't even require kiyun. And therefore, the chiddush is, and it's a big chiddush, that even so, even though we need the lova to admit that it's a shtar, that's all he has to do. Once that's true, the shtar stands on its own. Abaya says, which is the olive of the Ba'ash, Liolam diomer malveh. I'm saying the lender said it. He goes, well, if the lender said it, thank you very much for being a nice guy. Well, now let's think about that. Is it because the lender is such a nice guy? Or is it perhaps because of the fact that the lender owes money to people that he doesn't want to pay? These people are saying, ah, well, you got a lot of money coming to you from Joe. So we want to go take the money that Joe owed you. Here's the shtar. We went through your papers with the court order. And we want to collect the shtar. Oh, that shtar. Ha! You couldn't collect from Joe with that shtar. I never lent him the money. It was just a shtar to open a credit line. But I mean, chas v'shalom to you. Now, wait a minute. Maybe you're a nice guy on other people's cheshbon. I mean, how do we know that we should listen to you? There's a good shtar. He's murdered as a good shtar. We have witnesses, whatever the situation is. Why should we listen to you where you're chav la'acherim? So therefore, says Abaye le'olam k'diyam ha'malveh. Okay, gon shechav le'acherim over here, it's none of the malveh's business anymore because of the famous sheet of Rabbi Natan, which is called She'ibuda de Rabbi Natan. According to Rabbi Natan, we have an amazing halacha, which is that the Torah views She'ibudim as being directly transferable. In other words, suppose A owes B and B owes C. So now the question is, normally we would say, well, let C go collect from B, and if B doesn't have any money, so the most that C can do is force B in court to go and collect from A so that he can collect from A. Comes along Rabbi Nassan, and it is Dorish from the Pasuk that that's not the case, and that we don't look at the mechanism and instrument, in this case the instrument would be a bond of some kind, we don't look at the instrument as being specific to the people that were involved in it, lender-borrower. We look at the result of the she'ibud, because that's what's important to us. To whom does this money ultimately belong? And therefore, C can collect directly from A without even talking to B. That's called she'ibud Rabbi Natan. Therefore, in this case, B is effectively neutralized. He's the malva. He's neutralized. The fact that he says this shtar was a shtar amana. Sorry, sir. As far as we're concerned, you're a stranger to this iska. So, minayin lenoshe b'chaviro mone, v'chaviro b'chaviro, minayin shemotzi'in mizeven opibla, so how do we see that you go directly to court and go through, by bypassing the middle stage, go directly from A to C? Talmud lomar, we have a fascinating pasuk. In the case where somebody denies owing money, and he takes a shvua, then he goes ahead, and which is the case that is the makor of tshuva in the Torah, the makor of vidui in the Torah. This is v'yitvadu et chatatam. Is that pasuk? Only that pasuk. The entire mark. So in that case, it says, what's interesting, that he should be meshiv et ashamo. And who should he be meshiv it? V'natan l'asher ashamlo. He should give it to whoever it belongs to. What do you mean, whoever it belongs to? He should give it to whoever he stole from, or whoever he borrowed from, or what do you mean, to whom it belongs to? So why does it say l'asher ashamlo? The asher ashamlo, therefore, means to whom the asham belongs, which means that the Torah is interested in finding out the bottom line and not finding out the actual instruments and characteristics of the events that led to this moment, but rather to the underlying nature of ownership, and that's all that we care about. And therefore, in this case, the Chiddush would be gufa to tell me that we hold like this, and the Malveh is not believed. Rav Ashi, who is the shin of the Ba'ash, Rav Ashi says, the third possibility was Edim. So that we're actually talking about the Edim said it, and indeed we're talking about the Ein Ktav Yadam Yotzei Mimakom Acher, where we do not have corroborating evidence that this is their signature, and therefore we need them. So you'll say, so if that's the case you ask, then why are they not believed? It's a Pesha Asar, Pesha Yitir. And the answer is obvious. The answer is, even though in Ktav Yadam Yotzei Mimakom Acher, Vidika Amret, Amaylo Mehemne, why would they not be believed? I'll tell you why they're not believed. Because Rav Kahana says that a shtar, amana, is a vicious thing to be part of. That's why. So that memela, the reason that they're not believed is not because of any chisaron in the ne'amanut in terms of their testifying against something. It's rather the fact that what they're saying is not believable because we don't believe them to say bad about themselves. And therefore the edus is undermined by another principle, not by the principle of disbelief, or anything like that, but because we cannot accept what you're saying about these very fine people. You. It's a good thing to remember, Rich. Yeah, please do. And you can tell Mika also. Nothing bad can be said about such fine people. That's the point. About you. So that's Kiruv Kahana. The Omer of Kahana, Asur lo Adam, Shi Hashesh Tar Amana B'toch Beito. A man is not allowed to even leave a contract like that in his home. Now what's going to happen if you drop dead tomorrow and somebody picks up the shtar and says, look at this guy owed the estate $100,000. So you can't leave a shtar like that around. Mishum sheneemar al tashken bo alecha avla. Do not allow something disgusting to be sitting. This is an avla. It's a wrong thing. And a wrong thing is not correct to be involved in. And look at Rav Sheshet, Bereid Ravidi was medayik from that halacha. He said, Shema Minomid Rav Kahana, I see from there an indication that if a dim would come along and say, Amana, you devarenu, ein amanim, why would they not be believed? My taima. Kivan da avlau, did not Rav Kahana say it's an avlau, albeit he was talking about the malva, but the principle is the same. If you're telling me that it would be an avla for a malva to have it, then it would be an avla for you involved in the being creating it. And therefore, since it's an avla, a avla lo chatme, people cannot sign on an avla. Omer Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Asur lo la'adam shi'ashesh tar porua betoch beto, mishum shenemar al tashken bo'alecha avla. Another thing that you're not allowed to have is you mustn't have a star that was signed already but was paid, but you're still holding on to it. That you're also not allowed to have, because again, what's to prevent it from being used to recollect? And that's because there's no stampings. Al tashkin bo alecha avla, it says not to be mashkin it. So b'marava mishmei derav, they were a little bit more medayik, and they said like this. There's two psukim really. One says, it's actually one pasuk, but there's two different ma'amorim in this pasuk. One says, im aven biyadecha archikeil. If you have something evil in your hand, push it away. That's referring to a shtar amanah or a shtar pasim. Now a shtar pasim is very similar to a shtar amanah, and what a shtar pasim means, it's also not like pius, in which you want to show the bank that you are a good borrower, and your bottom line is a great bottom line. So you ask some friends to sign IOUs that you would be able to collect with, but of course you never will, but you want to show the bank that your incoming is, you got another few $100,000 coming in. So then you show them the shtarot. That's the same as the shtar amanah, the other direction, basically. And over there, you're asking the supposed borrower to do you a favor, to say he's a borrower, even though he's not a borrower. Okay, but that creates the same situation of the possibility of collecting money that is a lie. And you're supposed to be marking that. Al tashken, then the pasuk continues on to say, ve'al tashken bo'alecha avla, that's already referring to the shtar porua. And they're different. Tosis explains why they're different. An aven is something that is innately wrong. So these things were never true shtarot. The shtar pasim, the shtar amanah were lies from the beginning. The shtar that you have that's porua, what are you going to call it, an aven? It's not an aven. As an object, it was a perfectly kosher shtar, and it's fine. Right now, the chances that something wrong might be done with it makes it an avla to continue holding on to it. So you get rid of it. So you want to get rid of the avla. Okay? So that's very more meduyah than simply saying a general term, anything that's an avla. Let's, in Eretz Yisrael, they were more careful with their language. So one is an aven, one is an avla. Mandi amar shtar pagua koshken shtar amanah. So now, if you hold that a shtar, it parua, which was initially a kosher shtar, is no good. So shtar amanah, obviously, I mean, that's really a dangerous thing to have. There was no money that was owed in the first place. But mandi amar shtar amanah would say that there's nothing so terrible about keeping a shtar parua. Why? Because there are times where you have no choice. Because normally when a borrower borrows money, he's supposed to pay the court costs. Now the guy comes to you and he says, look, I don't even have money to buy a contract. So you say to him, okay, look, I'll pay to have the contract written up and so on. But when you pay the money back, you'll have to pay me for the costs of writing up the contract too. In this case, the guy did pay back the loan, but he didn't pay for the contract. So you say, look, I'm not giving you back the contract until I get the money, the remaining money, which is not the loan, but it's still part of your chov. And over there, since zimne demashile apshite de safra, sometimes you're allowed to keep that shtar, and then maybe you forgot about it. The guy never paid you. It's like 10 years later. So, okay, you know, one day I'll get the money. So he owes you whatever, that's a small amount, but it's still, he owes it to you, so you can't call that an avla. Itma. Sefer she'enu muga. Omer Ravami Achol Shim Yom Mutar Lishoto Mikan Ve'Elecha Sul Lishoto Bishum Shenemar Al Tashken Bo Alecha Avla. Very interesting halacha. You have a sefer. Rashi learns the sefer she'enu muga is a reference to a sefer Torah or even to Nevi'im Ketuvim. And this sefer has a mistake in it, and you have 30 days to correct that error, and after that you got to get rid of it. It's not allowed to be kept because it's an avla. It leads people to making mistakes, quoting psukim wrong, and that's terrible. Now, that's very interesting. Machlokas, we've shown him the Rimi Gash actually learns like Rashi, that this is a din where there is a halacha of ketiva. So the ketiva has to be accurate k'tiva mineil bay. It doesn't matter. What's the difference? It's clear what it means. And if I spelled it with an additional yud, I spelled it chaser, it would be molay. They're going to tell me, what are we talking about? Rabbi Akiva over here is going to be dirish. Kol tag v'tag tilei tilei shalosh. I said, I want to read it. That's all. No. Because there's a din in k'tav. Fine. But if it would come to a mishnah brura that has a mistake in it, the mameila, there's no din of k'tav over there. Right? But the Ramban, actually it's the Rosh, it's the sherish of that shita. The Rosh learns, on the contrary, there's even a bigger avla in keeping a Mishnah Berurah of the mistake. Because people are not going to make mistakes out of a Sefer Torah to Paskin and do something wrong, but out of a Mishnah Berurah they will. So why then does it say Sefer over here in terms of a halakha of Sefer? Because at the time that the Gemara was written, there were no six svarim. That's what he's going to say. We made this drasha at a time when the only svarim that were mutter to have anyway was the Sefer Torah to be a muksovim. I mean, even the Mishnah was still Baal Peh. So Mimela, that's why we say it in this way, Sefer Shenamuga. But the truth is, it would certainly apply to Dvarim Shebaal Peh that we now write because of the special dispensation that's gone on for a little bit too long, perhaps, but a special dispensation that we're allowed to write Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, so where's the 30 days come from? That's an interesting question. Some would say 30 days, because that's the derif, to be chaser, to get a cipher, to do the job, and so on. But others learn that's the pshat in al-tashkein, or shchunat, to be a shachin, you have to be there for 30 days. So this is al-tashkein, ba'alech avla. Don't be a neighbor to an avla. Less than 30 days, I'm not a neighbor, I'm just passing through. That's in the pasuk itself. Omrim Nachman, edim, she'amru, amanah hayu devarenu. If witnesses say that what it is that the shtar says is true, other than the fact that it never happened, but it's true in the sense that the Lova said it's okay, the Malva said it's okay, he actually was Meshavet his karka, but it was all basically an amana, a ne'amani. And if they say, moda'ah yudavarenu, so what happened is over here they have a shtar on the sale of the piece of property, where before the sale, the seller came in and brought them a video of, I'll make you a deal, you can't refuse. So they understand that the only reason he's selling is because he can't refuse. So he says, look, I got to go through with the sale because I'm going to lose my life, or I'm going to lose my kids, or whatever it is, but I don't want to sell this for nothing. So I want you witnesses to know that even though I'm going to go through with it, you are only going to sign on it with the understanding that this is because I had a gun to my head. So if he shows them that before, and they are clear about the fact that he does not want to sell, so then when they sign, and they come back later on, and now they're saying that it was actually a moda'ah, that he let us know in advance that it wasn't true, in that case, they're also not ne'amanim, says Reb Nachman. Whereas Mar Bar Rav Ashi says, no, there's two different halakas over here. If they say amanah hayu devarenu, they're a ne'amanim. But if they say moda'ah hayu devarenu, there they are ne'amanim. And I'll tell you the difference, my time. Hai nitan likate. They should never have been involved in the writing of a shtar amanah, as we said earlier, because it's an avla, and therefore we don't believe them, even though we need their testimony over here, because in k'tav yadam yatsim yamakom acher, we need their testimony, but what they're saying cannot be true, because it's being meisim atzman b'sha'im. Masha'imkein, when it comes to the moda'ah, what should they do? Not help the guy out and sign? And have him get shot? Or let somebody else do it where indeed he'll never be able to get his money back? So over there was nitan nikatev. And that's the difference. Hai nitan nikatev. Vahai lo nitan nikatev. Boimine rava mi Rav Nachman. How about, let me ask you something. In all of the cases that you've been saying that it's meaningless to us to come back afterwards and say something about the testimony which now undoes the contract, because the contract is viewed as a duot, and what you're saying is a kima chigit chumen of chazer mag, we pay no attention to you. But how about if you provide additional information that in no way affects the shtar? See, these things affect the shtar directly. So I understand you're saying, look, you're saying the shtar is a lie, basically. The shtar never happened. It's describing an event that never took place. Okay, I understand you hold that they're not believed for that. How about if they don't say anything of this sort? They say, the shtar, as written, is exactly true, and that the events exactly as described in the shtar took place, but there's a missing piece of information. The piece of information that's missing is that the sale was made on condition that within 20 years there should be inscribing of the sale in Tabo, and it was never inscribed in Tabo. And therefore the whole thing is now batel mavut. Now, it never occurred to anybody that it would take more than 20 years to get an appointment in Tavu. So, but, you know, that's how it goes. So because of that, it wasn't written in the Shtar. But this is the fact. So I want to know what you would hold in that case. They say, Tanai Hayu Devarim. So then, Mabu.
And this Tanai doesn't have to be written down.
No, not if we have witnesses. So, Moda'ava Amana. I understand Hainu Time, and the reason you're not accepting that is because in their new testimony, they're being Oker the previous testimony. So they're being Oker Leila Shtore. But if that's the case, you could say, so then this too could be viewed as effectively being Oker the Shtar, because now Lamaisa will have to give back the property. Odilma Tnai Mil Dachritihi. Or would you be willing to say that what's coming up right now, being as it doesn't affect anything at the time, in other words, what you described in the Shtar happened, and for the past 20 years, indeed, the property has been in your rishus exactly as described in the Shtar. What we're saying is that 20 years later, there was something that pops into effect that now affects it. So is that considered to be a milta achrita? Is that another issue? Or is that an attack on the validity of the Shtar? How would you view it over here? So, Omar Lay, once again, Rav Nachman, the Dayan, says, well, I can tell you the court procedure, gentlemen. When people come into court with a taina like this about a tanai, we tell them, gentlemen, you go ahead first, do what it is that the condition was, and then if there's still a problem, you can come back in court. But don't waste our time. So in other words, I do accept that kind of testimony. So now, what would be the din if one of the witnesses says it was a tanai, and one of the witnesses says, no, I don't know of any tanai. Now the question is the very fact that we have a hakasha over here to the shtar as it stands considered to be now an undermining of the kiyum of the shtar? Says Rav Papa, no. Tarvayu b'shtar ma'ayakam esadeh. Look, isn't the whole point over here is that the shtar as it stands is correct? Right? That's what you were saying. Shtar as it stands is correct, and the only question is, do we have the milta achrita? Okay, so we don't have the milta achrita, because we have an argument about the milta achrita. But there's no problem in putting together their testimony and saying that we're both agreeing that this is our ktav yad, and that the shtar as it stands is a correct shtar. So what's the problem? As far as this one guy who's claiming that there's a tanai, who cares about him? He's a single witness. That's he's a chad. Have a chad. Vein dvarav shel chad. And therefore, it's irrelevant. You're not thinking, my friend. Because if that logic is correct, then what you're saying is that milta achrite means that it's irrelevant to the kiyum of the shtar. That's what you're saying. Well then, if that's the case, then when you've got two people that are coming along and being mekayem shtar on their own signature, and they're saying that, we're both telling you, that there was a condition. Well, wait. You're saying there's two separate issues here. First, let's be Mekayim Neshtar. Okay. Let's be Mekayim Neshtar. And now what? Now we're going to go ahead and we're going to say that, yes, but despite the fact that we have a kosher shtar that we both agree is a kosher shtar, we want to be okay the impact of that shtar. So you're back to Kimachigit Shumnepos Romagi. When we said that it was a Milta Achriti, we don't mean it's a Milta Achriti in the sense that it's irrelevant to the shtar. Obviously, it has to be relevant to the initial signature on the shtar. Otherwise, who asked you to open up your fat mouth? We've got a perfectly good shtar with witnesses. You're coming along now, and you're saying, well, we witnesses remember 20 years later there's another piece of evidence. What are you talking about, another piece of evidence? If you hadn't said that evidence, would we have paskin on the basis of your testimony? Yes. You can't add to testimony anything that's going to undo the impact of what you already said. So it would be a kimachigit shubanachos remagit anyway. So in other words, what are we relying on? Only on the fact that we need you to be Makai in the Shtar, so we're willing to include this in our understanding of your initial testimony. But if that's the case, then if one guy is saying X and the other guy is saying Y, we don't have a similar Kiyam of a Shtar. One Kiyam is of a Shtar with a Tanai, and one Kiyam is a Shtar without a Tanai. Obviously, it's on a Bilta Achrita in the sense that we don't take it into consideration in describing the Shtar, correct? So you're looking at this as a black and white issue. Is it a Bilta Achrita completely? Oh man, if it's a Bilta Achrita completely, how can we accept you to say anything about it? Or is it exactly the fact that I'm coming to be Oker Shtar? Hey man, if I'm coming to be Oker Shtar, how can I be Oker Shtar if it's a kosher Shtar? So I'm trying to explain to you that Milta Achrita did not mean that it's a Milta Achrita in the sense of Kivichigit Shubedechos Romagit. I meant to say that it's a redefinition of the initial testimony, since I'm required to be ma'asher my signature. Then that means that we have two people that are being ma'asher signatures in two different ways. How can we put them together? We don't have testimony that this is one shtar. We have two different witnesses testifying on two different shtaros, my friend. And therefore, this is not considered to be a kosher shtar. Because if it would be the case, then there would be exactly the same thing with two people. Ela amrina, the reason that it isn't, we would be saying, Hani lameka sada toekaati, sainami lameka sada toekaati, that must mean they're coming to redefine the edus as it was initially. And in fact, Hilchasa, Ravuna Breder of Yoshua, Ravuna Breder of Yoshua is absolutely correct. We cannot put together one witness who says that it's lying, and the other who says it wasn't.
So Tan Rabbanan. Even if one's enough to be offered.
No, one's enough to be arkarit. We need two people to be b'kayim it. We don't have two people to be b'kayim it. Tan Rabban, shnayim chatubim al ashtar, umet. So we had two witnesses, the witnesses died. We now cannot use them to corroborate their signature. We need other people to corroborate the signature. So come along two people who, shnayim and ashukur are not signed on this shtar. V'yomru, and they say, oh, yes, indeedi, yadanu shekhtav yadamu, we know this is their signature. But we also know, having been there, that they were anusim, or that they were ktanim, or that they were psulei edut. So then, hareil ne'amani, since we need the testimony of these witnesses to corroborate the signature, we have no choice but to accept whatever it is that they're saying at the time, because they're not in a position of giving shigatru benechos romagi. But if we have an independent raya, let's say we have im yeshedim shiktav yadam huzeh, we don't know anything about the event. They can only identify the signature. Or we have another shtar, mishtar shekara alav arar, v'uzak bebeitin. There was another shtar that had been attacked in court as being a mizuyaf shtar, and the court went through the whole process of identifying the witnesses, getting the witnesses to corroborate their signature, and we now have a shtar, and here we have a stamp that indeed says mikuyam. Then we can rely on the signature that was mukuyam to be checked graphologically against the current signature. And if the two of them match, then why would we believe these other guys? Then ein elu ne'amani. But what is that supposed to mean? Why would we believe the other guys? You've got two witnesses against the witnesses. You're saying they're not believed, and they're not believed, and what? And use a shtar that witnesses are claiming is not a good shtar. Use it as a kosher shtar. Why? V'amai treva treinu. We have over here two witnesses against two witnesses. He's like, well, we got two witnesses. What are we going to do? I'm also two witnesses. I'm saying the shtar was signed by Ketanim. So why believe them? Believe us. Omer Rav Sheshes says Rav Sheshes is only one possible explanation for such an insanity. The only explanation is that for some reason we cannot accept the testimony of the latter two witnesses, because it's not in the presence of the first witnesses. Now, why would that be? Only because I view an attack on a content of testimony as being the equivalent of an attack on the witnesses themselves. So when there's an attack on witnesses, which is called hazama, where I can walk in and say, look, I don't know anything about whether what happened, but one thing I do know is, you guys are liars, because you claim on that day to have seen this event and you've signed a shtar, and I happen to be with you at a baseball game in a different city at that time. So I have no idea, maybe this is a good shtar, but it sure isn't your signature that made it a good shtar. So in such a case, you can't walk into court to say that, because since you're attacking somebody, the halacha is you can't attack people unless they're present. So therefore, if I'm going to say that where I begin with an attack on the content of your testimony, that is the first step towards an attack on the person himself of the testimony, which is called hakhasha techilat hazama. Whenever you start denying what the person said, that's viewed as the first step in trying to undermine the witnesses themselves, not only what they said. So that would explain, says Rav Sheshet, why it is that we don't accept what the second guy said, because it wasn't properly formed testimony, because it wasn't in presence of the potential accused. And since these witnesses are potential accused, they cannot be now in any way impugned by what it is that you're saying to the court, and you're claiming that their signature is meaningless. So that's called hakhasha.
Especially if they're dead.
Yeah. Yeah. That's called hakhasha techilat hazamahi, Kach ein makrishin et ha'edim ela bifneihem. You cannot even deny what they're saying unless they're present. To which Reb Nachman explained, normally Reb Nachman, will you explain yourself to what kind of nonsense is that supposed to mean? Suppose they were here, okay? You don't have a command of makrishin. They were here. And these witnesses say, no, that isn't what happened. They were ketanim, they were nusim, and so on. So what would be the din? The din would be that as far as trying to collect what this shtar is concerned, we would have to say, look, sir, I mean, there's no way we can use this shtar. We've got two sets of witnesses that are being makrishim, zeh. Obviously, we're not going to use this shtar to take money away from somebody else. So what would be the din? It would be akrasha. We couldn't rely on them to collect because they are edut mukreshet. So now we're saying, since they're not here, we take the moral high ground and we say, sure, use the shtar to collect money from this guy's wallet because of some technicality that they're not here and therefore we can't accept the testimony. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. Well, how could we collect with it? So now you're telling me, they're not here. If they were here, by the way, if they were here and these guys said that, you know what? They might have said, oh, that's true. We work tiny. We're only come to say that this is our signature. So, I mean, we don't even know that they themselves are saying anything other than that. That's all. All we know is that they signed on something. So they might even have been motivated. They'll not be motivated. So, man, I understand what you're saying now. So now they're going to be believed because they're dead and they signed. That's crazy. Let us wait until tomorrow to see what the possibilities are in this amazing case.
That's a great incentive.